Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming, or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. Visit speakuptalkradio.com. And right now, I have a writer with me with very eclectic writing tastes. She is Sandra Warren. Sandra has authored works spanning gifted education, children's how-to, creative writing, poetry, reader's theater, biography, video and audio production, as well as historical nonfiction. Two additional military biographies profile Army Reserve nurses who served in the Persian Gulf War. Sandra grew up in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and attended South High School, the subject of her latest book, We Bought a World War II Bomber, the untold story of a Michigan high school B-17 bomber and the Blue Ridge Parkway. And this is a fascinating story indeed, and I want to learn more. So welcome to the show, Sandra.
Thank you so much, Pat. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Well, now I want to touch on many of your books today, but especially your latest. But let's start at the beginning. What was your very first book?
My very first book was If I Were a Road. It was a open-ended story designed to enhance creative thinking in students in the classroom. And it's been out for 36 years, and it's still selling and still used in classrooms throughout the country.
So you had a beginning in schools and classrooms, so I guess that projected you to write Arlie the Alligator?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Arlie is also an open-ended story, but right after I came up with the idea, I met Deborah Bell Flagger, who wrote the music, and that propelled us into doing an audio tape at that time. Books on tape were just coming out, and they had just started doing them for children.
Wow.
So we were kind of on the front end of that whole market.
Right, you were cutting edge at the time, huh?
Didn't know it, but I guess I was.
There you were, a trendsetter, and you didn't know it.
Nope.
Oh, my gosh. So any other children books, or was Arlie the Alligator the first and only?
Oh, no. I did. I ended up doing a series of three. If I Were a Road was followed by If I Were a Table, and then The Great Bridge Lowering, and then I actually self-published Arlie the Alligator. Mm-hmm. So that was my first self-published mm-hmm. book.
Well, excellent. Now we're going to take a big turn here and talk about your book, Hidden Casualties, Battles on the Home Front, and When Duty Called, Even Grandma Had to Go. What caused you to then switch and write about Army Reserve nurses?
Well, it was a phone call after voting day 1991. I got a call from Diana Kwiatkowski. She had served in the Persian Gulf War, and she said she was voting and lamenting the fact she couldn't find anyone to write her memoirs, being a nurse during the war. And somebody at that voting table said, "You got to call Sandra Warren. She lives in Strongsville. Look her up in the book." And when she called, I said, "Well, I write children's books. I don't do this." And she said, "Let me come over," and the rest is history. So, and then through her, Sarah Ray, which is a pseudonym, by the way, but Sarah Ray, the story Hidden Casualties, was a member of her troop. So Diana was her officer, and Diana told me about Sarah. And so that's how those two stories came about. I had no idea if I could find a publisher, but I did, and that put me in war stories.
Wow, what a story. Here you are minding your own business, and you get a phone call that takes you into a completely different direction. I'm glad you took it.
Well, I am too, but I have to be perfectly honest. What made me allow Diana to come over was she very specifically said, "God told me to call you. You have to at least meet me and let me tell you my story."
Oh.
Now, how could I turn that down?
No, when God calls, you better listen.
That's right. That's
well, there's a life lesson for you. That is awesome. I love that. So then that got you to your most recent book, We Bought a World War II Bomber. How did that really come about?
Well, that came about because, in two ways. First of all, I attended South High School. South High School in Grand Rapids, Michigan was a 7th through 12th school. So it was really junior high, senior high, but it was called South High School. And somewhere in the back of the recesses of my mind, I remembered a story that a teacher had told about the students at South High buying this World War II bomber. But I didn't think anything of it until 2012, when I was asked to do the history of our school for one of my high school reunions. And part of it was I told the story of the bomber. Now, once the students purchased the bomber, they dedicated it in a huge ceremony at the airport, and it flew off, and they never heard from it again until 1990, when President Ford, who also attended South High School, he was a 1931 graduate, until one of the alumni went to him. I am so sorry. I apologize for my voice this morning. One of the alumni wrote to him and asked him to help find the bomber. And the report came back that it had been used for training and it was dismantled in Columbus, Ohio. Well, you can imagine these students worked hard, raised an extraordinary sum of money, purchased this bomber, named it the Spirit of South High, watched it fly off with all the dreams that this bomber was going to save the world and stop the war, win the battles, and bring our men home. So you can imagine all those years later to find out that it never even went to battle. It was very, very disheartening. And that was the story I told at my reunion. However, after my presentation, I was speaking to some of my classmates, and I made the comment, I don't know why the alumni were disheartened over the path this bomber had taken, because a B-17 bomber has a crew of 10. It has radio operators, engineers, bombardiers, besides pilots, and it could have literally trained thousands of men. So it very well could have, and in fact did affect the war. So I had made that comment to a couple of classmates I was standing near, and one of my other classmates, unbeknown to me, Joe Rogers, who was a veteran, heard me say that and decided he was going to find the log to this bomber and find out how many pilots are bomber trained. Well, he said it took him a long time. He went to the internet and he looked and looked and looked, and what he found was not the log for our bomber, but he found a crash report, and he found that our bomber, in fact, had crashed in Meadows of Dan, Virginia, on October 1st, 1944. Now, the reason he could find our bomber was in all the photographs, and there are a lot of photographs in the book, but all the photographs, you can very clearly see the tail numbers of our bomber. So now that we have the internet, which we didn't have in 1990, if you can believe that. I mean, it was in its infancy. He plugged those numbers into the internet, and as I said, it took him a while, but up popped this this crash report.
Wow, this is just a fascinating story. And as you were speaking, I was wondering, how many other schools bought bombers? Was this a unique thing, or was it something that was happening around the country?
Well, perhaps I should tell you what this whole bomber thing was about.
Okay.
The U.S. Treasury got very smart during World War II. You see, war is expensive, and somebody has to pay for it. And so to entice people to invest in our country by buying war bonds and war stamps, they held these funding campaigns, and they put a tangible face on everything you would buy. I mean, even children in their weekly readers, there were little tiny fillers that said things like, for one 25-cent stamp, war loan stamp, will feed a carrier pigeon for a day. And so there were all these funding campaigns. You could buy helmets, you could buy skis, you could buy they had a Jeep campaign where you could buy a Jeep, and there were, I think, six or seven different kinds of Jeeps. So they went anywhere from several hundred dollars to several thousand dollars. And so the Buy a Bomber program was the largest of the campaigns, and basically it said for $75,000 worth of sales of war bonds and war stamps, now you had to show proof that you had initiated these sales through your campaign. For $75,000, you could buy a pursuit fighter, but for $300,000 or $375,000, depending on which number you saw. Now, the cost of the bombers fluctuated. I've seen everywhere from $239,000 to $375,000. but for an additional $300,000, you could buy either a B-17 or a B-24. And further, if you were able to initiate these sales in that extraordinary amount of money, you could name it, they would paint it on the fuselage and fly it into your hometown for a dedication ceremony. And that's what the students of South High did.
Wow. How did they decide to get involved in that, I wonder?
Well, it all started with the Weekly Reader. Now, I don't know how old you are, but...
I remember it.
but actually, the Weekly Reader was an entity up until just, I think it was less than 10 years ago it was sold. But back in the 40s and in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s, every week, teachers all across the country would get the Weekly Reader, which would be full of historical and local, not local, but... historical events. It was a little history newspaper kind of thing. And it all started in Mr. Henry Mulder's civics class, an eighth grade class. And in the back of the room, Arthur Blackport, a 13-year-old young boy, sat. Now Arthur is still with us, and he will tell you he never raised his hand in class, and he don't know what made him raise his hand that day. But when Mr. Mulder read that they could buy a bomber, put their name on it, and dedicated it, his hand shot up in the air, and he said, Mr. Mulder, why don't we do that? And that started the whole campaign.
What a cool story, and that he's still around to remember that. I just love this story.
Yeah. Well, what's really extraordinary is they started with the pursuit fighter. You have to remember, $75,000 back then is equivalent to somewhere in the neighborhood of, it's well over $1 million. Mm-hmm. $375,000 today is equivalent to $5,288,000-some-odd.
Wow.
So we are talking an extraordinary amount of sales. They started with $75,000. They gave themselves 12 weeks. Within 6 weeks, they had initiated sales of $75,000. And because they still had all these weeks left to their initial campaign, the kids said, whoa, if we can do this in 7 weeks, we ought to be able to to get the big one. Let's go for the B-17. So they initiated another campaign on February 14th, 1943, and to the shock and amazement of everyone involved, 2 weeks later, on February 26th, they had brought in an additional $300,000 in war bonds and war stamp sales. Now, I have to remind children especially, there was no internet, there were no computers, there was no television. And so how did they do this extraordinary thing? Well, it was basically word of mouth. Mr. Mulder initially sent home 2,000 flyers with the kids telling how to buy a savings bond. A lot of these people had never purchased a savings bond before. And so they brought those home. Those went to family, neighbors, acquaintances. I'm sure the kids stopped people on the streets. They had posters. And so posters went up everywhere. They made all kinds of posters. They got the businesses involved, and, of course, the banks got involved because, you know, one of my big questions was, you can't tell me this money filtered through the schools. Mm-hmm. I mean, I couldn't even conceive of that. Well, it didn't. The savings loan stamps were sold in school. But war bonds were sold through the banks. And what would happen was, if you were going to buy a war bond, you would go to the bank and tell them, please give credit to South High School in their Buy a Bomber campaign. And that's what happened. Now, to take one step back, the way this was able to come about was, you have to remember during World War II, everything was rationed. You had to have a coupon to buy a pair of shoes, to buy a coat, to buy milk, bread, eggs. You were encouraged not to go on vacation, not to go for rides because it wore out rubber. You had to donate everything. It was really the first huge, huge, huge recycling campaign. That word wasn't coined then, but that's where what it was. On the flip side of that, there was very little, almost no unemployment. All the men were off to war, 18 to 38-year-olds, and the women went into the factories. So you had women and the men that were around, they were working 24/7 in the factories. So on the other hand, there was more money. People had more money than they never had before, and they couldn't spend it. There was nothing to spend it on, so they saved. And plus, President Roosevelt asked everyone to save 10% of their paycheck every week to put it into savings bonds and war loan stamps, because that would help the fathers, brothers, sons, cousins, uncles that were in the war and would help to bring our men home. So everyone felt it was their duty, from the tiniest child all the way up. And so people bought war bonds and war stamps instead of just putting their money into the bank in a savings account. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Wow. And you know what? That wasn't so long ago that it seems that it was just like something that people don't even understand or can't even fathom, but it really was not that long ago.
No, it wasn't. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize that apparently no one had written about the Buy a Bomber program. I've had people with their masters in history and those that are World War II buffs that thought they knew everything there was to know who said, I never heard of this. And I knew I had trouble finding information about it, but I thought it was just because I am not a trained researcher. Mm-hmm. I was writing this for the alumni of South High School to close a gap, to tell an extraordinary story for them. And let them know what really happened to their bomber.
Wow, you have been in the right place all the time here, getting all of these seemingly inconsequential requests here, fill in and write a little story for the reunion, and it ends out being this huge and important piece of work. Now, what is the connection? You mentioned the Blue Ridge Parkway. What's the connection with that parkway?
Well, here's where the story gets really crazy. The military report said it crashed in Meadows of Dan, Virginia. And I currently live less than 3 hours from Meadows of Dan, Virginia. And when I discovered that, to me, that was a big sign that I had to go to Meadows of Dan and learn about this crash. Well, I called the Patrick County Historical Society in Virginia, expecting them to say, oh, come on in, we have a display, we can tell you all about it. And the gentleman I spoke to said, oh, no, it wasn't a B-17, it was a B-24. It wasn't October of 44, it was March, and 11 crew members were killed. And I said, no, I'm talking about the one that crashed on October 1st. And there was a long pause, and the gentleman said, I'm 64 years old, I grew up here, I don't know anything about this crash. So for some strange reason, which nobody can explain, nobody talked about this crash. And so I went on the radio in Virginia and wrote to all the newspapers in southern, that area of Virginia, asking if people remember this crash. And people started to come out of the woodwork. And one woman said to me towards the end of the interview, you know, I never told my kids about it. And I was a child when this happened, and this was a big deal. And so so now it's a new discovery there. Then the other caveat is shortly, I won't say shortly, I don't know exactly, but several years after the war, the farmer whose property the bomber crashed on was sold to the Blue Ridge Parkway. Prior to the war, the Blue Ridge Parkway was in the process of being built, and it had come as far as Meadows of Dan, where Mabry's Mill is. And Mabry's Mill is considered to be the most photographed spot on the Blue Ridge Parkway. Has a lot of history there. It's a beautiful, beautiful, beautifully restored mill and outbuildings and things. And right behind the restaurant on the Blue Ridge property is where our bomber came down. So, of course, a writer friend of mine said, you've got to call the Blue Ridge Parkway. Well, I called them, and they knew nothing about it because the farmer that sold them the property never said anything, and no one else in that area had ever said anything. So they knew nothing about it either. And so, again, I wrote this little story for the alumni of South High School, and here it's become this really big deal. And I'm very excited that a historical marker has been approved and is in process. I don't know when it will be installed, but you better believe there's a whole huge group of South High alumni who are going to make the trip from Grand Rapids, Michigan. To see, to be a part of this dedication ceremony when it happens.
Wow. This almost brings tears to my eyes. This is just an amazing story.
It is. It is. I even emailed a writer friend of mine last night, and I said, you know, I keep thinking that I'm going to wake up, and this is all a big dream, mm-hmm. because it's such an extraordinary tale. But it's more than a tale about the students of South High School. It's really a story about the patriotism that permeated this country during World War II, where everyone, especially the children, felt they needed to do their part. Mm-hmm. And so it's really symbolic of that era. Now, to go way back to the question you asked me before I got on this tangent, you asked me how many other schools actually bought bombers. Well, I don't remember the exact count, but there is a list of over 220 bombers, all different kinds of bombers and pursuit fighters were purchased. You see, this campaign was offered to the American people. So businesses, organizations, churches, counties, cities, and schools got involved. I believe I counted, and I'm not completely accurate. I don't remember exactly, but I believe I counted 11 school systems where the whole school systems got involved. And I think there were maybe three sticks in my head that there were three actual schools only themselves that did it, like South High School did.
Interesting.
And the gentleman who maintains the list told me that people have tried to trace their bombers, and as far as he knows, no one's been able to do it. So, again, another extraordinary thing is how this whole thing came about. But perhaps the most extraordinary thing of all, two of the pilots are still alive. The captain, Captain Arvel Stredbeck, they both turned 100 in April.
Oh, my.
They're both, able to be interviewed. They both told me stories about it.
Oh.
And if you can imagine, these two gentlemen who were retired military, who have these extraordinary military records of their time they served in World War II, they get this call from this strange woman who wants to talk about the bomber that crashed. I mean, you know, I almost feel bad about it, but it was because of Captain Stredbeck's orders that the crew survived, and so he did an extraordinary thing.
as this came out, is there anything that surprised you about the response to the story? What kind of response have you been getting?
I've been amazed at the response from all different ages. Of course, most interested are those that lived it or remember their grandparents and parents, the older citizens, but also the interest among schools and young people and people in general, aviators in general. I've spoken to aeronautical societies and an aviation museum, and I mean, just the wide range of audience that is interested in this story is has been extraordinary, and the whole thing surprised me. So.
Well, talk about surprising. Let's get to you personally. Did you learn anything surprising about yourself while writing this?
Wow, what a question. It was just something that I had to do. I felt that I had to do this, and now that I've done it, it doesn't feel like it came from me. I can't explain it, but it was something I felt compelled to write, and now that it's out there, it's everyone else's. It's not mine anymore.
I like that answer. I get it. I know what you're saying. Well, what's next then after this huge project? Do you have anything else in the works?
Well, first of all, I can't imagine having more fun doing anything, writing anything else in my life. But I am writing a middle grade nonfiction, historical nonfiction version of this story that I'm really excited about. Plus, I also have a novel that's almost ready about the orphan trains, another part of history that people have never heard of. So I've got a few things in the works.
Yay, we're going to keep our eye on you. Well, now we've talked about some of the things. I know there's probably more, but for today, is there anything that we missed that you would like to talk about?
I don't think so. I mean, if you get me started, I could go on and on and on.
All right.
But, I will tell you one story really quick. Several people I interviewed told me that the young boys went in and took pieces parts from the bomber, and they would make rings out of them.
Oh.
And I kept asking people, "Do you have a ring? Do you have a ring?" I wanted to see what these rings would have been like that came from our bomber. And last October 1st, which was the 71st anniversary of the crash, I did a book signing in Meadows of Dan, and after I spoke, a gentleman came up to me. He took a ring off his finger, and he handed it to me, and he said, "This belongs to you."
Oh my gosh.
And he told me that his friend Coy Hall made it and gave it to him. He said Coy and his two brothers were milking cows because the bomber crashed at 4:50 a.m. in on October 1st, 1944. And he said his two older brothers ran over and took some pieces parts because there were parts spread over like 100 yards, size of a football field. You can imagine this is a big bomber, and that his friend Coy made this ring, and he gave me the ring, which will eventually be donated to the Patrick County Historical Society, but for now, I wear the ring. So.
What an unbelievable journey you have been on, and you've been able to create for the rest of the world, really, a huge piece of history that was missing. And so I'm going to encourage everyone to find out more. So where can folks go to learn more about you, the story, and where can they purchase your books?
Well, the book is available on Kindle and in paperback on Amazon, of course. And you can also go to my website. It's sandrawarren.com. And all the information is there. I've also added, as I speak, people tell me extraordinary stories. So I have added, I believe I put it on there, I've added something on my website about the story after the stories, and telling some of the stories that people have shared with me, how that they remember as children in school, they had to go out into the fields and pick the white fluff out of the milkweed pods because that white fluff was used as insulation for the army vests, and everything was saved. I mean, there were just so many stories. so many stories. A lady said the teacher told them they had to turn in all the rubber, so she gave up her rubber dolly when she was 7 years old. And, you know, there's just so many extraordinary stories that have come out of this story that I feel like I have to share, too.
That's very interesting. So this project's going to live on. The stories after the story. Yeah, so head over to Sandra Warren, W-A-R-R-E-N, Sandra, S-A-N-D-R-A, Warren.com. This has just been a treat for my ears. Sandra, what a blessing to have met you. Thank you for sharing this today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been my pleasure.